Hey there, and welcome back to another episode of the Simple Pin Podcast. I'm your host, Kate All. I'm the owner and founder of Simple Pin Media. We are a Pinterest management agency. Today kicks off our summer story series. So we like to do this on the podcast every summer because we know a few things. One, people are traveling in their cars, traveling on planes, maybe even some trains. They are at the beach. They are doing things at the park. They are outside. And it's sometimes easier to put in your AirPods or headphones and listen to stories that inspire us. I am a huge podcast listener, and I love to listen to the stories of other people because I take away ahas. And so this first interview is with Molly Kaiser, and we're going to talk about her story and her gift of thinking straight to monetization. There is so much in this, and I, as the interviewer, took away so many things. In fact, there's an amazing aha moment that I talk about at the end of the podcast with Molly, to which she said something that really hit me in a way that had not hit me before. I think I knew it, but it just took this interview to really bring it out. So we're going to do 4 podcasts over the next 4 weeks that are just stories. We just want to encourage you to listen. We want to take a break from the tips, the tricks, the action items with Pinterest, and just allow us to listen to a good story so we can have a little bit of a mental break and a little bit of a moment of calm, right? Before we dive into the interview, though, I want to let you know that one of the things we do best here at Simple Pin Media is Pinterest management. We have women on our team who have been there for 7, 8, 9 years, who have seen all different types of Pinterest accounts. We have worked with over 700, 800 Pinterest accounts. Our team knows the latest tactics, best practices, strategies to grow your business on Pinterest. There's all the things that our team knows, talks about, eats, sleeps, and breathes Pinterest. And we have services for every type of budget, business, and need. And we have a team set up to meet with you right now to see if hiring us, especially for Q3 and Q4, as we will see Pinterest grow, is the right move for your business. If you go to simplepinmedia.com/services, you can set up that free call. I want to be super clear. This is not a strategy call. You can certainly hire us for one of those. This is a discovery call to see if we as a team are the best fit to take Pinterest off your plate so that you can focus on other areas of your business. And the last thing I want to mention, Pinterest is growing again, which is great news. In fact, it was 7% growth last year into 463 million users, and 97% of those searches are unbranded. We really want to help get your products, your content in front of those people. So again, go to simplepinmedia.com/services to book a call with our team to see what service is right for you. Alrighty, get ready for an amazing episode with Molly Kaiser.
You're listening to the Simple Pin Podcast, Pinterest for business advice that goes down smooth and easy. Here's your host, Kate All.
Hey, Molly, welcome to the Simple Pin Podcast.
Hello, super excited to chat with you again.
Me too. And thank you for being the first in our summer story series. And we've got some amazing questions for you that we're just going to dive right into. So this is the first one. When did you first believe, understand, or whatever word you want to use, that you were an entrepreneur?
I love this question. It's like business therapy here. Well, I've thought about this a lot because there wasn't like one moment where I woke up and was like, I'm an entrepreneur. But both of my parents were/are entrepreneurs. So my dad actually was this is like the craziest job, the coolest job, I think. He was actually a toy inventor. and he would sell his toys and things to Mattel and go on trips to New York City and do like a lot of really cool things. And then when I believe they laid everyone off and shut down the toy making place. And we lived in a 9,000 person town. And so his only option really was to like start his own business. And so I grew up watching him start a manufacturing company in the basement of our house. And so I think, you know, obviously I was really young, and so it's hard to know, like, oh, I woke up one day and was an entrepreneur. But I'm going to go ahead and guess that seeing all of that subconsciously in my head, then I knew, you know, oh, this is something that I can do. And I also thought it was so cool that if I was sick or needed to be picked up from school or something, my parents could actually just leave and come and get me. And I remember thinking, wow, that's so cool. Like, not everyone's parents can do that. So yeah, I just kind of always had it in my head that I wanted that freedom. And then in about middle school is when I first picked up a camera. And I remember when I picked up a camera, it was like, oh, photography is cool and everything, but how do I start making money with this? So I started in high school doing like high school senior portraits and family portraits for people in our city, just, you know, a couple $100 here and there. And I just always had in my head, like, how do I monetize my hobbies was always sort of something that, because I figured, oh, I really like this thing. And if I can make money while doing it, isn't that kind of the best of both worlds?
How cool did you? Okay, so I'm curious, when your dad stopped working, it was Mattel, right?
So he worked for a company called Funmaker in Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin. But what happened is, like, they would create all these toys, basically. And then, at least the way I understood it, is then they would go to these like toy fairs, or they'd have meetings with like Mattel or different toy companies. And then those companies would actually decide if they wanted to purchase those toys or not. So they would pitch them to the larger companies. Like, I know his partner that he, because it was just him and one other guy that worked at this toy place. And his partner had like a board game that got picked up, things like that.
Did you have a bunch of toys around your house? Like, were you your dad's like test ground?
Oh, yeah. Like, I remember sitting around the dining room table and he would just like push a toy towards me and be like, okay, play with it. What do you think? And then he would see like if we liked it or not. And I remember we were in a couple commercials too, because they took Fun Noodles and made, I don't know if it was him or his coworker, but they took Fun Noodles and made like these hula hoops. And then they would have us like hula hooping in a commercial or something. It was wild. Like, all the neighborhood kids would come over to our basement, and our basement was just like littered with toys.
Oh my gosh, what a fun childhood though. Like, you had all, not only was your dad like inventing and experimenting, but like you were watching that, and it makes sense that you're thinking like, okay, how do I monetize this? Like, camera's great, it's amazing, but like, what's the next step? And I imagine there was not a lot of other kids in your town that had parents who were entrepreneurs, right? Because a 9,000 town is small.
Yeah. Well, okay. So, and then my mom owned a dance and music school, which was also very cool.
Yeah.
My parents are very creative. And then, yeah, out of all my friends growing up, I don't think any of them own their own, their parents own their own business, except for one. Both of her parents were vets and owned their own vet clinics. And so I do remember seeing their freedom too. And they had a really nice house and an in-ground pool, and they lived on the lake. And I remember being like, wow, like, my parents, you know, they had really cool jobs, but, you know, it was never, they never made money like that. Like, I remember going to her house and being like, wow, like, I want a diving board. Like, I want a boat, you know, this is so cool.
Oh my gosh, totally. All the things as a kid that you're like enamored at, and then you look at later in life and you're like, oh, wait a minute. How did that, wait, we didn't have that, but they had that. It's all this like weird stuff that you've got to like reconcile
with for sure.
As you get older. Okay. So you picked up a camera. You began to monetize. Talk about how, where that went.
Yeah, yeah. So I remember very first camera I got was just like a, what they call a point and shoot. So you can't like adjust any of the settings or anything. And I remember I would just bring it to like middle school and then eventually high school, like parties. I would just take pictures, and I don't know, people always, oh, it's the girl with the camera. and I had, I actually had a Zanga, which is, you know, only millennials or Gen X probably even know what that is. It was kind of like the first version of sort of like a blog. And I would post those photos, and I would put polls, and like people in my high school would come and be like, oh, that party was so fun. Or so I started to kind of dabble in photography, but then also social media, if you think about it. And I went to school to study photography, and I went to two different colleges, and both those colleges, like, they stopped funding the photography programs. And I remember I was racking up all of this college loan debt, and they weren't necessarily teaching me how to monetize my art. They were just like, oh, have a gallery show. And I did the math. I'm like, well, if I sell one, even $1,000, you know, portrait at a gallery, you know, and I get two gallery shows a year, I'm like, how am I even going to eat, you know? So I ended up dropping out of school, and I remember I had 81 cents in my bank account. I was living in my grandma's spare bedroom, and I ended up just knocking on different business doors. I knocked on like the door of a bakery. I knocked on the door of like a manufacturing company. I was just like, hey, can I take pictures of your products? You know, oh, well, what do you charge? I don't know, $200. So, you know, I sort of started that way. I got free Vistaprint business cards. And I had a 1987 Chrysler New Yorker POS, you know, car driving around. I'd park really far away so people wouldn't see, like, oh yeah, I'm secretly poor. And I did that. And I'll remember I went on Craigslist. I booked a bunch of weddings. I did that for a while. And then that all translated into getting into portraits, and then eventually boudoir photography, which is sort of more like kind of like sexy pictures for your significant other or to build your confidence, things like that. And that actually, I built a multiple six figure photo studio from 81 cents, which is crazy.
Wow. Yeah, it is.
So yeah, I mean, it really is possible. Like, you just have to, if you look at what I did and you analyze it, I really just found people that had a problem. And then I said, I'll solve this problem for you for X amount of money.
Okay. So one of the things we talked about before we started, which I think this hits on it a lot, is you being highly visionary and really just going all in. So when people hear the word like cold knocking, cold calling, just getting out there, it evokes fear in some people, like, oh my gosh, I could never do that. I would be so scared. Can you talk a little bit about like where, I mean, 81 cents is a motivator for anyone, right? You're like, I don't know what I'm going to do with this 81 cents.
Yeah. When you have to ask your grandmother who works at Walmart for pretty much minimum wage for money to buy food, like, that's pretty embarrassing. So yeah, that'll motivate you.
Yeah, exactly. So when, for 100%. So when you're going up to these doors, when you're going up to these businesses, what's the thing that's like getting you to knock? You know what I'm saying? Like, I am very held back by fear and failure. So I start way back at like, I'm still sitting in the room looking at my bank account with 81 cents and I'm like freaking out. But I look at somebody like you who is visionary, who is like, I'm going to hit the pavement and I'm going to get out there, but you still have to say the words. You still have to get up the confidence to do that. Can you remember what it was like during that time to like motivate yourself mentally, or even did you just go, right? Like, what was that like for you?
Yeah, I think a lot of different things. I think I have this ability to turn fear into excitement. And, you know, if there are any psychologists listening, please unpack that for me. I don't know how I do that. But the other thing is, I always play this game in my head called worst case scenario. And I just think, okay, so I go and knock on the door of this bakery and I ask them if they want photos of their cakes for their website so they can sell more wedding cakes, right? And I just think, what's the worst case scenario? Like, worst case scenario is they're like, oh, we don't actually need any photos right now, but, you know, have a great day. Like how is that a bad scenario?
Yeah.
So I think that's what I always do, is I just play in my head like, okay, well, the best case scenario far outweighs the worst case scenario. And also, I think being a business owner and growing up around business owners, you know, I would see people would come to my parents' businesses and, you know, they were never mad about it. So
I think
business owners have this community, you know, where they want to help each other.
Mm. Yeah, I would agree 100%. And I think what you just said was so great. You have an ability to turn fear into excitement. And I think that's such a gift, right? Like, oftentimes it's the thing that might be an outlier or not a lot of people have it, but I'm envious of that, right? Because I'm such, like we said, I'm not high visionary. I'm more high operator. So I go like, okay, if this, then that. And my worst case scenario is always 100 steps past what you just said.
I was going to say, what would, in your head, if you had a camera and you were going to knock on a door of a bakery, what would your worst case scenario be in your head?
Yes, exactly. They would be mad at me. That would probably be it. They would be like, why would you even ask me? This is crazy. I know that's not true.
Someone would do that. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, I know that's not true. But I think it's that point of like where your head goes back before you even start. And I have had to work at saying, this is not true. This is not going to stop me from putting one foot in front of the other. But I think that there, it's more common than not where people get to that point where they say, like, I'm just not going to do it. It's not worth it. It's not worth the mental energy. It's
or,
not worth
it. Yeah, maybe someone thinks, what if I knock on doors all day and waste a whole day?
Yeah.
But whereas I look at it as it's a numbers game. Like if I knock on 100 doors, there's no way that at least one of those people doesn't say yeah.
Right. Which I think is such a great, it's almost like that analogy of glass half full, glass half empty. And I'm normally glass half full, but it's interesting that like these certain things in our lives, when it comes to business, they like collide and you're like, oh, I can't do that. But you took yours and you're like, I'm going to use it for really good things. And then it ended up leading to your boudoir photography and growing this. And I know, so talk a little bit about that. So you've got this really successful boudoir photography business. What's kind of your next step as you move through that?
Yeah. So I bought a studio in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. It was very successful. I ended up, you know, I was like, oh, well, I want to keep growing this, right? Because ultimately, although I like photography, I love business. That's like I said, even when I got my first camera, my first thought was, how do I monetize this?
Right.
Like, I just
not really, normal.
I like the strategy and game of business. So yeah, I had this studio and I just wanted to keep growing it because it's just, it's fun. You know, I enjoy the game of entrepreneurship. And so I ended up going the route of, I hired a studio manager and then I hired a second photographer. But two things happened. Number one, my studio was my name. So that was a bit hard because people would book a session, they would expect me, and then they would sometimes get this other shooter. So that was something we had to kind of play with. And also, as we've talked about, I am a visionary. I am not an operator. And this is probably going to be a pattern throughout this episode.
Yeah.
That I have learned that that's not my strength. And I know there's a lot of people out there that are like, just join my $10,000 program and I'll teach you how to be an operator. And that's great. But for me, that has not worked. I've probably spent $200,000 trying to become an operationally minded person, and it just has not worked for me. So I think sometimes we need to really just know what our strengths are and just lean into that direction. So what happened next was people, like, I noticed some of my photo shoots that were getting booked with me were with other photographers. And I noticed that during the session, they would just ask me business questions. And I wasn't mad at it. I was just like, that's smart. You know, they're paying to get portraits for their business and they're getting, you know, business advice. And that kind of led people being like, well, do you do coaching? Do you do workshops? Do you do this? And I was like, yeah, for sure. Like, I totally in my 20s, especially, was just like a yes to everything person. And so I started doing coaching and workshops, but I quickly realized, you know, I'm already so busy with my studio. Now I'm still trading more of my time for money. So a friend of mine actually introduced me to like digital products and courses. So I started a blog and I built a following through blogging and I moved them to an email list. And then I decided to start selling digital products and courses for these photographers. And it was great because I was already talking with them. I was already doing these coaching and workshops, but I also was the ideal client. So that was really cool. And in my first year, just with the photo education, we did $254,000. So it was, and I mean, it was 85% profit margin. Like, I remember my accountant calling me and being like, oh, you have the highest profit margin out of all of our clients. And I was like, oh, cool. Like, I didn't realize like how amazing that was.
Right. And she's kind of like, what are you doing? What are you selling?
I just had, you know, and I think too, this is like, you know, you have to keep in mind, I started my business when I was like between 17 and 19 years old. So I think a lot of the confidence also comes with just not knowing.
Yeah, like, true.
When you're in your 30s or 40s or 50s or whatever, you're like, I think you have less of a glass half full because you've probably had things that you've tried that did go wrong. But when you're like 19 years old, like probably nothing you've tried has gone wrong yet. So you're just like, oh, like this will all go right.
Yes, exactly. It's kind of like the false confidence to do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Because really, you're right. Nothing's going to go wrong because it's never gone wrong before.
Exactly. Yes. Because you never had a business before. Yeah.
I know. So fascinating. So you grew this 85% profit margin. Is there an element where you're now managing a studio, you're managing people, now you're managing digital products? what's going on in your mind as you're managing all the things?
Yeah. So in the beginning, it actually was pretty okay because I just had the studio manager and then my second shooter at some point, she ends up moving away. So, and I didn't hire anyone else. I ended up just charging more and taking less clients. I just found that that was a better model for me than trying to like franchise a photo studio when I'm not an operator. And then my studio manager, she was full-time employee. So she was able to actually, because we took less clients, but we were still making the same or more money because we were charging more. She was able to like manage all of that plus do customer service and some other things for the education side. And then, so over the years from about 2014 to 2018, it was usually just for the digital products and courses business. It was usually just me and like one or two other people. And the, let's see, in 2017, we hit 500K and that was still 85% or more profit margin. And it was just me and a couple other people. So that was pretty easy. And some contractors, you know, like copywriter, blah, blah, blah. And when I say easy, I just mean easy compared to what I'm about to share next. Because obviously like business is not easy, but it is worth it. So yeah, then I was like, okay, well, how do I grow further? And I joined a mastermind and I had people telling me, you know, well, it's a lot easier to grow faster if you have like a high ticket product. And so, and you know, as you've seen, my pattern is like, yes, 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 right, to everything. So I was like, okay, cool. Well, I'll just combine all my products into one and have a high ticket offer. And I will tell you the pro before I tell you the con. So the pro is we did like we retired everything and went all in on this high ticket program. And so we essentially went $0 to $2 million in 2 years, which is crazy. But I didn't know. It's hard to weigh the pros and cons in your mind of making a decision when you haven't done it before. Like you don't actually know what lies ahead, right? Yeah. And so I thought, oh, well, yeah, you charge more. Like, and I did that with my photo studio. So that makes sense, right? I didn't realize though, to sell, you know, a $6,000 course, you need to have a sales team. And then to have a sales team, you now need to have like a manager for that sales team. And then like, who is now managing the manager? Like me, you know, at one point we had a team of 25 people and the business looked amazing on the outside and we were making good, great money, but I was absolutely the most miserable probably ever in my entire life. Because I wasn't leaning into my strengths anymore. Like I was no longer doing the fun stuff that I love, like content creation. You know, it was more like, okay, now we got to hire this person. Now we have to manage this person. Like it just,
you were the operator and it was like extinguishing your visionary flame completely.
It was horrible.
Okay. So then what's next? You get to this horrible point.
Yeah. So we, I mean, yeah. So my husband at in about in 2017, I was like, hey, you should leave your 9 to 5 and, you know, run our Facebook ads and stuff. That way we could travel. And we moved across the country to Austin, Texas and did a lot of cool stuff. But he ultimately also was not, he was also like very unhappy because managing, you know, millions of dollars in ad spend is very stressful. So we are both are pretty much in like the most stressful roles, working way too much. And when I was doing the 500K with 85% profit margin, I was like hardly working. I was literally traveling around Europe, like doing whatever I wanted, you know? And so I'll get more into this, but that's ultimately where I am back to now. I am back to more of that, you know, maybe less revenue, but way more profit and like a very minimal business. So it's just me and a VA. But essentially what ended up happening was, so my husband and I were like unhappy with the business, but you know, we had all this responsibility. We had all of these team members and we couldn't let all these people down. At least that, you know, that's how it feels. Well, so what happened was COVID, hello. I think you guys like know COVID. We all know her really well. She's a bee.
Terrible.
Oh my gosh. So like, honestly, it's like thinking back to that time, it's just like gives me PTSD to be completely honest. Like thinking back to that time, I'm like, I don't ever want to live through that again. Essentially, the highlights are we had a live event that was supposed to go live April 2020. good times. And like, we weren't even legally allowed to have an event anymore. None of the vendors would give us our money back. We had spent the ticket sales on the vendors. You can do the math on that one. So we ended up like recording the event, sending it to people. People were angry because they wanted the live experience, blah, blah. I mean, there's really nothing more we could, that's like all we could do. So, and then the worst thing that happened, or the best thing, you guys will have to let me know. I think it all happened for a reason, to be honest. So because of COVID, our team was all like pretty much all mothers because we employed all women, except for my husband. And what happened was overnight, they all lost their daycare, their nannies, their this, their that, right? And so literally overnight, almost our entire team emailed us or like Zoomed us or whatever, being like, hey, yeah, so my husband still needs to go to work and I don't have daycare. So I like essentially can't do my job anymore. Yeah. And to me, it's like, oh my God, we could unpack this on so many levels, how the COVID pandemic was so unfair to women and like set back the women's workforce by like a lot. But let's not get into that because it's a bit off topic. But essentially, you know, we found ourselves like without a team, basically. And so in this moment, we were like, okay, everything's on fire. Yes. Like literally on fire. We did not see any of this coming. Like, you can plan for a recession. How the heck do you plan for a global pandemic?
Yeah, right? Nobody. It's only in movies. That's where it lives.
This was not something we ever could have predicted. And then, you know, our team was all of a sudden essentially kind of gone overnight. Like they weren't leaving tomorrow, but they were like, hey, you know, I'm going to have to find something different that works with my new life, basically. And so we thought, okay, well, this business was not set up to sell ever, because a lot of people ask me that, why didn't you sell it? Well, you can only sell a business that is, number one, sellable. Number two, something that people want to buy. Like, I couldn't find anyone that wanted to be the face of a boudoir company.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I talked to some people that I thought would be a good fit. None of them had any money. That's the other thing. Like, you can only sell a business if you find people that also have money. So we thought, okay, well, we can either spend the next year of our lives essentially rebuilding this business, you know, we would have had to just kind of like, we had the program and everything, but we would have had to really go back to like the studs essentially and sort of like rebuild. And I also had been in the photo industry for 16 years. And I just honestly really wanted, in the back of my head since 2017, I wanted to talk about digital products and courses. And so I thought, okay, well, I can either spend the next year like essentially starting over with this thing, or I can spend the next year building the thing that I want. And both of these are going to be probably the same amount of work. And so, yeah, ultimately I decided to pivot, and it was painful, and nobody teaches you how to close a business.
No, they don't. You're right.
It was painful. Like, on one hand, I feel like we really did the best we could in the situation. Keeping in mind, you know, we're also going through the pandemic. It's hard to make decisions when you are essentially being screamed at by, it feels like you're being screamed at by the world. You're hearing from, you know, just everyone, the news, the students, the employees, like all, everything's on fire. And then you're trying to make decisions. It's so hard to make decisions when everyone's in panic mode, you know?
Mm-hmm. And there's, I think the thing too, at that time was, I don't know how to frame it up right. So I'll just use like whatever language it comes to mind. But like in those moments, you look for leadership and you look for people who tend to be like anchors of like, okay, we've got this. It's like there's a storm or a fire happening and there's the firefighter saying like, come this way. And there's literally no one, because no one knows what they're doing. It's like even people trying to sell like, how do you build it or grow a business through the pandemic? It's like, that's a bunch of BS, because you don't know what you're doing either. And you're trying to sell me this and it's not going
to
work.
Oh, and I forgot to share with you guys the biggest piece of the fire. The biggest piece of the fire is that I helped who? I helped photographers, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, guess who the country now told cannot take clients legally?
Yeah, anybody in the wedding industry too.
Yeah. And so overnight, we had tens of thousands of dollars in chargebacks overnight, because people could not take clients. And so they no longer wanted our program, because our program taught them how to get clients. So like, I mean, absolute nightmare situation, like truly.
Okay, so you have this in April 2020. This is like crazy. No, this is, but I think this is the true authenticity of a story, right? This is how people move through these. Like, this is part of your story. This is part of what you've learned. This is part of how you're going to grow, right? And oftentimes we want to like be like, okay, yeah, I was like burning down in April 2020 and I pivoted and here we are now. It's like, wait a minute. Like there's more.
And I'll be honest, for those of you listening, if you've heard me tell this story before, like I have gotten deeper into the story as I've told it. And I want you to know, it's not that I'm being inauthentic. It's just when you go through something so traumatic, you honestly kind of forget. And so I feel like after telling the story over and over, I've like remembered pieces of it.
Yeah. Which is actually, that's like the therapy of it, right? Is when we talk about it more, these things come to light and you're like, oh, that was really hard. And I didn't recognize it before, but I recognize it now. And that's kind of a gift to you, right? Because then you're like, oh yeah, it was hard, but now I know differently, right?
Yeah. So, in the beginning, I didn't even want to talk about it. Then I got to a place where I'm like, it would have been easier for me to go through it if somebody else had shared.
Right. Right. I think to that point, right? Like we're talking about the pandemic, which is so traumatizing for everybody, right? Like 2020 is just like a bomb went off in our lives. Yeah. Right.
Whenever I see people being like, oh, my business had the best year ever in 2020. I'm like, that's nice.
Yes, that so totally. You're like, that is not the same.
Like, next podcast, moving on.
Right, exactly. But I think what's interesting is that we're still that same sentiment of what do I do next is still happening now. Like we see people saying, I'm so burnt out. What do I do next? I want to pivot. I don't know what to do. Or I just need to get like a full-time job where somebody else is in charge and not me. So I think even though 2020 is like the big billboard, there's like tiny little billboards on this highway that are happening left and right, even currently as we're struggling through this recession. So for you, you talk about your pivot a little bit. Talk about that. Like, okay, you went to this place. And what was that process like for you to say like, okay, it's burning down and now we're here?
Yeah. So really, I like to say I didn't technically start my current business, Freedom Creator, until 2021. Because in 2020, you know, we were going through so much with closing the business. And obviously COVID, and I know everyone was going through it. So definitely not trying to be like, oh, I was the only one. It was hard for everyone, you know? And so what we decided to do was actually, we basically like took the rest of the year off, which was obviously very nice to be able to do that. And I did a lot of therapy. And so that really helped me. Like I did a lot of therapy that I think also had needed to be done a long time ago, especially as an entrepreneur. Like, you know, I think, I don't know, this could be a whole other episode, I suppose, but like going through this therapy that looked at my childhood trauma really made me like a better entrepreneur and got me to ultimately see what I really wanted and not just always saying yes to everything. And like, and there's nothing wrong with mentors and coaches. Like I love mentors and coaches, but it was my own fault that I had just been like, oh yeah, like I'll do that without thinking about, well, is this what I want? Is this actually going to lead to, you know, blah, blah, blah. So we really took 2020 off to just sort of like decompress and, you know, like just better ourselves and prepare for what was next. And actually, this is a little blip in my story that a lot of people don't know. But in 2017, when I had the billion different digital products, I started a second business where I had like a podcast for entrepreneurs and I was starting to teach digital products and courses. It only lasted a couple of years because my mentor was like, you really need to go all in on one thing, which was what happened before I went all in on the high ticket program. And so you can tell, though, that based on that, like I had always wanted to do that for a long time. And so it was easy for me to know what was next for me. I knew, because in the back of my head, ever since I closed that, I had always been like, ugh, because I had to choose between two businesses. It was so hard. I had to essentially choose between, I liked them both, but I had to choose between the one I liked more and the one that was more profitable at the time because I had had it longer. And so, yeah, I was very excited to come back to, you know, digital products and courses, making money online. It took me a couple of years to really hone in on my ideal client and the messaging and all that. I don't think people talk about that enough. That's the hardest piece, I think, is aligning product market fit. And so what I do now officially is I help content creators monetize their content with digital products and courses. And yeah, so basically in 2021, we just kind of hit the ground running. You know, we started with creating content. We started with, actually, the first thing we did was we created the program and then we pre-sold it. We did 20K our first month, which was pretty cool. And with only 200 people in a Facebook group, like no following, I started completely from scratch because I had talked to some of my photo students and none of them were actually, like there was no crossover with photographers. Photographers didn't want digital products and courses. They wanted more bookings. So I knew that I was going to have to start a new following, which is a challenge. Yeah. So that's kind of how it all got started.
Okay. I love where you're at and how you, there's a lot to unpack. This episode could be like hours.
Like too much. Yeah.
I know. No, but it's so good. And I think one of the things I want to kind of pull out from some things that I heard you say were you spent $200,000 on like trying to be an operator or you had mentors and coaches. And I'm kind of leading this and I don't mean to do this. So I don't know if this is the way that you would feel. But if you had a rant kind of about a false message being shared in your industry, what would it be? And do any of those experiences kind of lend to that?
Like, I have so many that I would like to share. I'm a ranter, people. But I'll share two. I'll share the one that, you know, you're leading me to.
Yes, I know.
I'll share the other one. Okay. But yeah, here's the thing. I think in online business, there are two worlds, okay? There is the world of online entrepreneurship, and then there is the world of monetizing being a creator. These are two different worlds. And like, I have come to find this the hard way. So when I started my photo education business, I was a blogger. Okay. I grew a blog. I grew an email list to 60,000 people from this blog. And it wasn't until I joined a mastermind filled with entrepreneurs, like online entrepreneur, digital marketers, I suppose I should call them. It wasn't until I joined that, and it wasn't until now, looking back, that I realized why a lot of their advice didn't work for me. It's because I was not a digital marketer. I was a freaking content creator. Because essentially they were like, run ads, run ads, run ads. Like, and I'm like, but I already have like a massive following. Like, what do you mean run ads? Like, but at the time I was like, okay. So I'm like dumping all this money into ads. And then they're like, do a high ticket program. But like, I was already selling everything passively on autopilot, traveling around the world. Like, I already had, like, not to be snotty, but like, my business was better, to be honest, for me, like better in terms of I had crap tons of freedom. I don't know if I can swear on this podcast.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, I had shit tons of freedom. Like, I was making a lot of money, huge margins. I had a small team. Like, life was good, you know? But since I was in my 20s, I thought, well, I have a lot of life left to live. You know, let's grow this thing bigger. Like, I didn't realize, though, that, you know, I probably should have just been okay with just growing it slowly over time. I didn't need to go $0 to $2 million in 2 years. I probably just needed to continue creating content and growing that way. Because ultimately, when we started to run ads, our profit margins went down, 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 down. And I'm not saying no exclusively to ads. I think the mix of content, because like, and I should say, and this is not just to play to Kate here, but the reason my blog exploded was because Pinterest came out at the same time and I was an early adopter.
Yes. And it benefited a lot of people in the beginning.
Pinterest like, is like, oh, mate, I love Pinterest.
Yeah.
But yeah, so essentially, though, I really learned over time, looking back at that experience, there are two worlds. There's the content creators and the digital marketers. And I think that you need to decide which one you're going to be, because I truly feel like so passionate that these are two totally different worlds.
Yeah. And thank you for saying that, because actually, I think I've known that, but you saying it, it's like, oh, right.
Right? I know. They're- like, dude, therapy, I'm telling you. It woke me up.
I know. I went to, in 2020, was it 22? It was 22. I went to the ConvertKit conference, Craft and Commerce. And it was my first conference that I had been to after the pandemic. So it had been probably since early 2019 that I had been to a conference. And I sat there and I thought, this message feels different. And I couldn't put my finger on it, right? But I was watching people in the room who were podcasters, musicians, writers. And I had never really been at a lot of conferences where what the message wasn't about digital marketing, but the message to these people was like, how do you get better at managing your time with creating? How do you guard your creative energy? How do you, and not until right now in this conversation, I'm realizing, oh, you're right. There's a total difference between creator and digital marketer, like full stop. And you can't, the creator has something innate in them that always wants to create. And there is that element of when you add the ads thing. And I feel this actually, maybe this is why it's resonating with me. I feel this so personally because I've been a creator of content for Pinterest. I've always thought of me being a teacher or a guide or a coach. And I've wrestled out with this digital marketing piece of like, oh, I'm not doing ads. Am I not running my business well? Am I not doing these things? But I love creating and I love for people to consume what I'm creating. And there's always been this tension. So I think you just hit the nail on the head of, oh, that tension is there and it's okay to feel it. And you are either in one camp or the other, which I think is fascinating.
Yeah, like with creators, it's like you... If you're wondering which one you are, and by the way, neither of them are better than the other.
Right.
But if you're wondering which one you are, like ask yourself, how did you start? And do you enjoy creating content more or do you enjoy selling more? Because I find that with content creators, it's like you really care to help a certain community of people and you create content around that no matter what channel it's on. And then you can start to monetize that community, you know, by giving them more things that are, you're selling these things, but by creating things that you can sell that still continue to help them, right? But with digital marketers, I find it's more about, and again, one's not better than the other, but I find that they're not starting with organic content. Like I find that they're just like, okay, I have to find a problem in the market and, you know, figure out how to monetize this. But like when I was in this mastermind, you know, it was like, I would share like any little, what I thought was basic thing about content creation. And they were like, wow, because they're just not content creators, you know, and I didn't realize that. I thought I was the digital marketer, but yeah, over time I've really learned, no, I'm the content creator. I like to create things. I like to put my creative energy into growing the audience and the content. But also learning about both these worlds did help me because instead of putting all my creative juices into creating a million products, now I know the better business model is like one or two products and putting my creative juices into more content.
Yeah. And you know what I have felt in the past, and I probably in 2019 was when I had the aha moment, is that there are, and I didn't have the same words. So I love this creator digital marketer piece. But I would feel frustrated because I would see people who would be really good at marketing their Pinterest courses. And then what I would hear inside my community was that people were disappointed with the content that was in these courses. Yep. And so I was getting these things and I was like, oh my gosh, it's like, it is so frustrating to say, I feel like there are really good marketers and there are really good people who are going to teach, right? And I would feel this tension of, I don't feel like I'm a good digital marketer. And that frustrates me because I want more of my teaching and my message to reach people. And it was just this like, you know, I'm going to be honest here. Like it was a lot of like jealousy, right? Like I was jealous that somebody was good at being a digital marketer, but it is a rare find to find somebody who is good at both. You know, like I can't really think of anyone who, I mean, there's a few people I guess I could think of, but they were so good at this like marketing piece. And it was just, talk about therapy. That was one thing that my coach had to work through with me. I was like, she said, you just got to push that out of the way and just be you. I was like, okay, I will, I'll do that. So
yeah, it's so true because you think, oh, if I just create a really great product,
yep,
then everyone will come and buy my thing.
It's but the field of dreams analogy,
the unfair
right?
Fair truth is that it's actually all about the marketing. And we've all been where Kate just described, like you buy a program because it has amazing marketing and you get inside of it and you're like, are you freaking kidding me? Like this is a recording of a live event you sold for $10. Like that shit pisses me off.
It does. Me too. I have seen it before and I'm like, you put this out there and there was nothing.
No,
that
I'm the girl who literally like revamps my program every year. Like I am obsessed with making sure like every script and every word and everything is like perfect, writing down all the questions and making sure, like, I know that when people have questions, it means there's something missing in the program. Like, I'm obsessed with that. And I have to say, I do think that is another difference between more of the content creator business and the digital marketer business. Now, I can't say that like obviously not all digital marketers do it that way, right, where they take like a crap course.
Correct. Yeah.
That's totally not true, but I have seen a lot of people do that. So yeah, we'll leave it at
and
that.
You know, maybe you know, to like put a cap on that, I would say while I or you or anybody else might struggle with this thing of I'm not a digital marketer, but I am a creator, they too could struggle with the same thing. Like, I wish I could be more of a creator, or I wish I could be more.
Oh, absolutely. Every digital marketer wishes they had a million subscribers on YouTube.
Right.
And then you know, oh my gosh, I know so many creators that have a huge YouTube channels and like don't make any money. And that's why I do what I do. Cause it's like, I want to help these creators, no matter what platform you're on. It doesn't matter if you're a blogger in Pinterest or YouTube or Instagram or whatever. It's like, I love helping creators. Like, I know that you guys start because number one, you like creating content. And number two, you like freaking helping people. And so that excites me to help those people make more money, because I know when I help them make more money, they're going to make more sales, which means more students that they're helping. And I know their content's going to be good. Especially, I will say, the best courses I've ever bought are usually from YouTubers, because they know how to be good on video.
Yes.
And yeah, so their courses are like mind-blowingly good.
Yes, I would agree. I have recently like really loved getting into YouTube, and I find so many, like, I'm consuming the content, which I think makes us better at what we do with YouTube, like in all different industries, which I have found super fascinating to watch creators. And now it's like, you've just blown my mind with this whole thing. So I can't, okay, moving on from that. But I would say, what would you gush about? Like, you know, we've talked about the struggles, we've talked about the differences between creator, digital marketer, all those things in this industry. What's something you're like, I freaking love this. It's amazing about our industry.
I mean, I feel like I'm kind of repeating what I already said, so not to be a cop out, but like, I just love that in this industry, people are leading with wanting to help and serve others, you know? So they're creating this content that is for free, that's going to help somebody get a result or change their mindset or get them a small win, whatever that is. And then they're building an actual relationship with these people. And then in turn, you know, now they trust them. And so it's, I find, so much easier. Well, let me explain. I think, like, if you're running a Facebook ad, for example, to acquire a customer for, let's say, $1,000 course, you're probably going to spend around $500, maybe more dollars. But if you have like organic content, obviously, it's your time and maybe you're paying an editor. Like, I don't know those expenses, but it's going to be a lot less. And it's easier to get a sale because you've built a relationship with these people. So I don't know. The thing that I gush about, I think, is just mostly that people are leading with really, truly caring and wanting to help and create a community of like-minded people who want to, you know, usually there's some kind of mission around it. Like with my photo education business, it's like, I wanted to bring together boudoir photographers and help them get more bookings, because then I knew that more women would become empowered around the world. Cause I would be, by getting photographers more sessions, I would be helping women get like more women experience a boudoir shoot.
Right. Right. I love that. Okay. We're going to switch from industry to entrepreneurship, and I'm going to camp on something you said in the beginning about your dad. Like, you realized like, they could come get you during the day, or they had this flexibility. And just recently on LinkedIn, I was at a point of burnout and I asked, I said, what keeps you wanting to be an entrepreneur and not work for somebody else? So with that, for you, like, what is the fun parts about being an entrepreneur that keeps you saying yes every day? And even at your points of pivot to say, yeah, this is the life for me.
Yeah. So for me, number one, I think it's important for everyone listening to know that I've never had really a job. like, it's almost like I can't even imagine, I really, truly can't even imagine myself doing anything different. Because you know, I worked at like an ice cream shop in high school. that's about it. And so I think that's interesting to know. But for me, it's definitely just one word. It's just freedom. Like the fact that, you know, I can wake up when I want, I can go to sleep when I want, I can choose if I want to wear sweatpants or I want to get dressed up. Like I can do whatever I want, whenever I want.
Yeah.
And that to me is like, I cannot have it any other way. Like I have, which might be a false belief, but I have this belief that if I did take a job in corporate America, I'd probably be fired within 3 days because I would just be like, oh, you're doing this wrong. You're doing that wrong. Like I would just want to run the company.
Right. Right. So, all the lessons, right?
Yeah. But that being said, I just want everyone listening to know that I'm not against having a 9-to-5. In fact, I shared with Kate before we started recording that, you know, if you want to start a creator business where you grow a following and then monetize it, like I think there's absolutely nothing wrong with either keeping the job you have now or getting a job and growing your following on the side. And then, you know, I do think it's important to monetize it as soon as possible because even from day one, you can be making sales as you grow. But I think that that's a good way to play it safe if you're somebody who doesn't want to like, you know, like if you have kids, like I understand you don't want to like risk your whole life and your house and everything going all in on a business, you know? And so I don't know. I think that's a good way to do it. I don't know if you guys have heard of Ali Abdaal. He's a YouTuber, but he was a doctor and he did YouTube on the side for years. He actually did it on the side until he was making $1 million a year.
Wow.
You probably should have quit being a doctor. Like, well,
yeah, there's some benchmarks that I'm like 500,000, maybe.
Yeah. But like, I just wanted to point out, or was it 1 million subscribers? I think it was 1 million. I don't know. Okay. One of those, either way, a lot of subs and money. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I follow, this is like really funny, but I follow a guy on YouTube that my Thai massage therapist recommended, and he's like a physical therapist and he has like 3 million subscribers on YouTube and he has like tons of stuff that you can do at home when you have like a knee injury or back pain or all these kinds of things. And I look at somebody like that and I'm like, that's genius. Like you had this thing that you were skilled at and you took it to another place and another level. And I see, you know, that's the good part, I guess, of the pandemic is that a lot of people who never thought of moving online moved online. And now all of a sudden they can reach this like broader audience. Whereas this physical therapist was like, well, I think he's in Wisconsin actually.
Oh my God, shut up. Cool.
Yeah.
That's where I'm from originally.
Exactly. So I think he's like, you know, he probably thinking like, okay, well, I can't see anybody and my people need to, it just a cool, you know, transition. That was like a rabbit trail. But yeah, I love the word freedom.
I think that that really ties in also that like you can do what I did where like I had a photo studio and a photographer education company, or you can decide to go all in and just like on your online business, like what I do now, you know, there's different routes and you just have to really sit and think about what's best for you. Like what's going to make you happy? What's going to get you to your goals? Like maybe your goals aren't, you know, oh, I want, my biggest goal is that I want to be able to decide if I'm wearing sweatpants today or not. Like maybe that's not your goal. You know, maybe your goal is that you love your service business and you just want to be able to make sales 24/7 online or make more money or diversify. You know, there's so many different ways to do it, which is why it's like, clearly I get so fired up about this because hearing about that chiropractor, I'm like, oh, I could make millions of dollars.
Yes. That's, I love, so you go straight to monetizing. That's the theme here.
I love, like, honestly, my dream is like, when a content, like my best day ever would be a content creator with big following reaching out to me and being like, hey, how do I make a lot of money from this following?
That like, is amazing.
Hello.
Let's <Yep. do> this. I think that's the title of this podcast, Straight to Monetization. There we go.
Love it.
Okay. So two more questions for you. If you could have dinner with any entrepreneur, author, business owner, who would it be and why?
Okay. So I think this person's music's good, but like, I'm not like a obsessive fan.
Okay.
But I would choose Taylor Swift.
Oh, totally.
And the reason I would choose Taylor Swift is because I think she is an absolute freaking phenomenal businesswoman.
Yep. Yeah. Yes. I love that. Okay.
And I think her music's good. I'm not like a Swiftie at a concert.
You're not going to post those pictures on Instagram of you fully dressed up, ready to go to the concert.
No, which I think is so cute. And I support,
it is cute.
But like, it's just not me yet.
Yes.
I'm not a trampled by turtles bluegrass at Red Rocks kind of girl. So,
so great. Okay. As you look out over the next like 3 years in business, there's a lot obviously swirling right now with, you know, are we in a recession, not a recession? Is there going to be more, whatever it is? What do you see for yourself and for the industry?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Pandemic, inflation, recession. It's all super fun, isn't it? Love it.
Best news of the morning, right?
Really overpaid for a new car. Super fun.
Yeah.
So for me, it's funny. Like, I feel like old me would be like, I'm going to have a million more products and I'm going to have a book and I'm going to have a live event and I'm going to. Nope. I'm probably about to bore you with where my business is headed, but I promise you it's going to be so much fun. I have a membership and I have a course and I have my community online through YouTube and Instagram. And my goal over the next 3 years is to simply grow those things. It's simply to keep the things that we have, the foundation, and just help more creators. My membership helps people who already have a following or want to start growing their following and then monetizing it with digitals. And then my course is very meta. It's a course that helps you create a course. I just want to grow those things. And as far as the industry goes, that's an interesting question. I honestly try not to really think about predicting the future because I just feel like it's a waste of time. Like, there's just no way that we're ever going to know, like, what's going to actually happen, you know? But based on predictions, we know that, okay, I do pay attention to data and predictions. So based on data and predictions, we do know that Facebook is going down, like trending down. We know that, well, TikTok was trending up. I'm not sure if it is anymore. I feel like Pinterest, blogging, Instagram, that's all like pretty safe bet.
YouTube,
I feel like, is only going to continue to
skyrocket.
If I was starting over again from day one right now, I would do the same thing. I would go all in on YouTube and Instagram. Absolutely. And then as far as like digital products and courses go, like, it's only going to continue to trend up. Like, that's actual data that's out there online. And if you think about it, it's like, why would that ever go away? Like, education's never going to go away. And you're just selling it online. So unless the internet went out, which would give us much larger problems.
Yeah, it would be bigger than a pandemic.
Goodbye to the stock market and whatever else.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the stock market used to not be online. Anyways, I'm showing my millennialness right now, but
it's okay. I've got the Gen X to support you.
I'm like, oh yeah, Dewey Decimal System. That was a thing. I think that where it's headed is only good places. And here's something I will say. My business started in the 2008 recession. And I do think the recession we're in now is wildly different because of inflation. It's almost like, is it a recession? Like, what is happening? I truly do not know. But I will say this, when times get tough and people are pinching pennies and they don't, you know, maybe their job isn't, maybe like this is hypothetical. Obviously, it's very obvious that people are not being paid enough right now. When things go up and wages don't go up, people are looking for side hustles. They're looking for additional ways to make money. And so I think really the key here, and which is another reason why I chose the niche that I'm in, is I knew that this would be a good niche to be in during a pandemic, during a recession, during a blah, 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 XYZ. So I think if you're wondering where you're going to fit in the recession, number one, you can't predict anything. But number two, think about what are the problems people are having and are potentially going to have, and how can you maybe make a slight pivot? You don't have to go to a totally new business or anything, but maybe make a slight pivot. So like, let's say you're a baker and you know COVID's happening, which you didn't, but let's just say you did. You're like, oh, okay, well, now I can sell like cake kits, or I can sell like a course on how to bake a cake at home or whatever. So you're staying in the same spot, but just slightly pivoting. So, yeah.
Man, Molly, I have been, well, I will say my hope for all of these interviews is that as anyone listening, they would have an aha moment. So my aha moment that your gift to me is that leaning into fully being a creator is, that's who I am. And not continuing to try to be something different in a digital marketer and outsourcing those pieces that need to be outsourced. And I think it was just as I've wrestled out, I guess, 9 years into my business, who I want to be and how I want to move forward. in those next 3 years of business, I think there is joy in this identity of creator. And I never really thought about it until this conversation. So that's my aha. And thank you for that, because I think I needed that. And just living into who we are as entrepreneurs in our industry. And I think that is very different. And I think that's why I was so particular about saying, like, there's an element of each industry that we're in, but the core of who we are is an entrepreneur, and we have reasons for why we do those things. And I love that you shared so much of your story from your childhood to now. And I'm excited to celebrate you and to watch how you grow and how you expand over the next 3 years. And I just think your love of helping people monetize is contagious and it's encouraging. So thank you for sharing all of that with us.
Thank you. This was so much fun. And yeah, just last parting word is just lean into your strengths. I think that's so, so important.
So important. I agree. Well, we're going to put your links in the show notes, but where can people go to connect with you? And I'm sure there's people who are like, I need Molly's energy. I need someone to help me monetize. Where can they go to connect with you?
Yeah. If you want, you know, help from a sassy mountain living girl, then yeah, I actually have a podcast now. It's called Freedom Creator. So you can check that out on, you know, wherever podcasts are. And then if you go to freedomcreator.co, I have lots of cool freebies on there for you guys, like a free email list building funnel, free training on courses, just lots of goodies to help you explore or make more money with digital products and courses, monetizing your following.
I love that. Thanks again, Molly, for sharing your story. It's been a delight to chat with you.
Thank you.